I'm Kirsten Smith from ESRI again. And David Watkins is going to talk to you about creating parcel map books with ELTS. Never that, maybe.
Never that. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. Get this projector going.
Again, my name is David Watkins. I work at Redlands. I'm the product specialist for a product called MPS Atlas. Have any of you guys heard of MPS Atlas?
Yeah.
A couple of you? There we go. Yeah. All right, well, I have this really great PowerPoint presentation. But after that, I'm just going to forget it. I forget to see it. So what I'm planning on showing you today is a set of tools that we write as an extension to ArcGIS. Have any of you heard of the production line tool set, or PLTS, before? Several of you. So this is a set of tools that we write. Can everybody hear me? Yeah. This is a set of tools we write in the professional services group at ESRI. So at ESRI, we have different divisions, different working units. And one of those is actually a division that does real work. We do real projects for real customers. And as a part of that real work, we've started developing solutions. Solutions to different types of work that people have to do. So we take ArcGIS and we add to it. We add additional functionality. And a lot of times we add, a lot of functionality, but we add all of the different components that you might need to do a particular type of work. So, you guys are all in the cadastre business. So we don't actually have a cadastre solution as of yet. We're looking at putting one together. But what we do have is a whole series of tools, and we found that a lot of people in your line of work have been finding some benefit from it. So what I'm going to do is actually show you this tool. And I'm going to skip the whole PowerPoint here. So, again, this is a product called MPS Atlas. It's a standard extension you can get from ESRI, and it's a component of the production line tool set. So it comes as part of a larger suite of extensions. So, I'm just opening up ArcNet here. Get it refreshed correctly. So what I've loaded here is parcel data. This is actually the city of Redlands, where I live. I've loaded in the entire city, so it's all kind of jammed together. It doesn't really work at the scale. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually batch up a map out of this data. And I'm going to do it using a different layer that I've got in here. I've got a layer that I call subdivisions. Let me just turn that on. I don't know if you can see that. Make it a little darker. So it shows up on the projector. So I've divided the city up into a number of blocks. And they're all different sizes, they're different shapes. And I'm using this just as an example. You can use any size, shape. If you want all of them square, if you want them all the same scale, that sort of thing, you can set them up to do it that way. In this case, I'm going to have them all be different scales, and I'm going to have them, I'm actually using four different scales for this map book. And what I'm going to do is create a different map book for each subdivision that I've got here. I'll turn on all my layers here. I'm going to turn the subdivision layer off because I don't want to see it. Now what I'm also going to do is, you'll notice right now I've just got a blank page. And I actually want a layout. This is just a PDF file, but I want a layout that looks more like this. I've got some page numbers here, parcel numbers, some additional notes, a scale bar down here, that sort of thing. So what I've got is I've got a map template built that I'm going to use as I build this, and it's got all of this information in it. So MBS Atlas, this tool has two tabs that get added to your table of contents tab. One of them is this MBS Atlas tab. And this is where I'm going to build a whole group of maps, or a whole, we call it a map series, but I'm going to take all of those subdivisions and make a map for each one of them. The other tab I have here is something called the Elements tab. What that gives me is a list of all the elements in the page layout. And I can actually go into those elements in the page layout and do some different things with them. I'll show you that as I get going. So to start with, I'm just going to go to this MPS Atlas tab, and I'm going to start a wizard that will step me through all the different properties I can use to set up this map series. So if I right-click in it, I get a number of different options, and they're really just different options for how I want to, different wizards that I can fire off. I can add a map series, I can add something called a simple map series, which just doesn't have as many properties as the standard map series. Or I can create a visual extent map sheet, which is, in that case, I'm just going to create one map sheet. For this demonstration, I'm going to actually go through the full-blown add map series wizard. And it's pretty long, it's like 11 pages of wizard that you have to step through. But it'll give you an idea of all the different properties that you have available to set up when you're creating an atlas like this. So the first thing I can do is title my map series. So I'm going to go in here and call this red one. I'll go next. And now what it's going to ask is, what do I want to use as my area of interest source? So I've got a feature layer already loaded here called subdivision. So I'm going to go to my layers data frame and use my subdivision layer as my area of interest source. So it's going to use that to page up all these maps. From there, I can actually select the maps that I want to create. So I'm going to use the select button, and it'll bring up a little dialogue with that layer in it. I've got a number of different options for how I want to select those. I can use a SQL query to select them. I can select all. I can just use the little selection tool here to select all of them, and I'll just do it like that. And then it's going to provide me a list of all the different ones it's going to create. And I can actually look at different values. I'm actually going to use the subdivision ID to name these, and that's what it's going to name all these map sheets when it creates them. And I'm going to use the subdivision ID because that actually shows up on the map itself. And I want to show you how it dynamically updates automatically. So next I have storage options. So how do I want to store this? If I go back here, what it's going to do is it's going to make, I've selected 131 subdivisions. So it's going to make 131 maps all at the same time. And when I do that, I can either store them all in the current map document, or I can even store them individually, where I could store every single one as its own MXD. And if I do that, then I would browse to a location on my hard drive somewhere, and I could save all those. Is that really out of focus, or is it just me? Really out of focus. Sorry. That better?
That's
just not
Zoom.
Okay.
It's just
How's that? Yeah. Sorry about that. Okay. Yay. All right. So for this, I'm actually going to store them all in one map document. So I'll end up with 131 maps all in the same map document. Now it's going to let me select a layout. And I can use the current layout. And like I explained, I've just got a blank page here. So I don't really want to use that. I'm going to go in and select that template that I was talking about. And I've got a couple of different options for the type of template I want to use. So I can use any existing map document that I've got as a template. So if I've already built a layout that I really like, all my maps are using that, I can just pick one of those maps that I've already set up as a map document and use that as a template for all the rest. Or I can actually use a map sheet from an existing atlas. And I'm actually going to do that for this. And there's one real advantage to that. So I'm going to actually select this assessor map template here. The real advantage is I'm going to go through all these dynamic properties now. And if I pick a map that I've already set up with those dynamic properties, they'll already be set for me. So I could, in theory, just go next, 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 and I'd be done. I'm going to kind of pause as I go through each one of these, though, just to show you all the different properties that we've got available. So the first one is rotation angles. So how do you want your maps to rotate? I'm going to put all these maps together. I may want some that it rotates the base of the map so that it's, you know, the streets or the parcels line up along the base of the map. So I might want each one rotated a little different. I can also rotate all the maps to true north if I want to. It's not really an issue for the kind of maps you guys are making, but a lot of people need that. I can also apply a fixed rotation where I rotate all the maps the same amount, or I can just not rotate them at all and just leave them, you know, straight up and down. It's up to you. So what I've got in this data is I've actually got a field that I put on my subdivision feature class that has an angle in it. And I'm going to use that to rotate each map to a specific angle that I told it that I wanted to rotate. And this way I can rotate each map so the parcels are lined up along the base of the page. Next I've got spatial reference. If I wanted to automatically calculate a different projection for every map, I can do that. I can also, again, store a projection in a field and have it project every map using that. And I could have three different projections if I wanted to, or I could have, you know, as many different projections as I wanted. And as you switch from map to map, it will update that. With this, I don't really have a projection, so I'm just going to leave it at the projection that the data frame's at right now. I've got an option to buffer these maps. And I'm actually going to buffer them a little bit. So what this is going to do is it's going to take the edge of my subdivision and it's going to put a little space between the edge of my subdivision and where it thinks the map ends. And I'm going to do that on purpose so that when it makes these maps, I get a little overhang of, you know, the parcels or the streets so that you get to see, you know, it doesn't come right to the edge of the parcels. It sees a little extra space. So in here, I've set up a buffer of 25 meters. That seems to work pretty nicely for these. So the next options you have are scale and extent. So how do you want the maps to change as you go from map to map, or maybe you don't want them to change? And I've got a bunch of different options in here. I can set a fixed scale where, let's say, I want every map to be 1 to 1200. I can do that. Just say all of them 1 to 1200. I can also set a dynamic scale where what it's going to do is it's going to take whatever my shape is of my area of interest and it's going to squeeze it down to fit in my data frame. And it's just automatically going to do that and it's going to calculate whatever scale it thinks or it figures out that it needs to be. So I could have every map be a different scale that way. Similar to that, I've got an option called round scale to nearest value or round scale to nearest. And what that does is it works like a dynamic scale. But then once it gets to the end, you know, it's figured out how big it needs to be, it rounds off the scale to a kind of a consistent value. So I don't end up with a scale, in this case, you can see up here, it's like 62,358. It would round that off to be, you know, to the nearest thousand. So I would get 62,000. And so I can set it up to do that, which makes a lot more sense for any cartographers who are out there. For this, I'm actually going to use this other option, which is set scale from field. So again, what I've done is I've populated a field on my subdivision feature class with, I believe I used four scales. And it's going to make every map one of those scales. And so I've used a smaller scale for the bigger areas and a larger scale for the smaller areas. So they consistently come out exactly the scale I want them to. The next option is for a dynamic definition query. And I'm not actually going to use one on this map, but just so that you know it's there, what you can do is set up a definition query that filters out the types of features that show up on your map. So if you want to just show, try to think of an example. If you you just want to show certain features and you've got them coded with the subdivision name, you can filter based on that name. So you only see the highways, for example, that fall on your layer or your subdivision 3025, something like that. For this, I'm not actually using a dynamic definition query, so we'll skip that. The next option is page size. And this is the last one, I promise. So it is kind of a long wizard to step through. But the page size allows you to set up multiple page sizes that the tool will actually figure out what the best available page size is given the size of your area of interest and the scale that you pick. And then it will basically, it'll jump between page sizes. So you can go in here, and I've got all the standard page sizes that a printer will take. And you can, you know, choose all of the page sizes, or none of the page sizes, or, you know, you want it to be able to jump between letter and letter landscape and letter portrait. You can actually have it flip back and forth between portrait and landscape. Kind of some funky stuff you can do with that. For this, all of them are the same size, so it's not going to change the paper size at all. What I've done is set the scale so that it'll always fit them on the piece of paper. So all of these, this is it's like 11 by 17, so all of these will be 11 by 17. So I'm just going to use no change here. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to hit finish. And what this is going to do is it's going to take those subdivisions, it's going to divide up my pages, going to take the template that I selected and create the layout from that. And it's going to build over here, or it's actually counted up, 131 different maps. And it's going to do it all at the same time. So what I end up with is it's going to zoom to each one of those subdivisions. And if I take one of these other maps and right click on it, I can set that as the current map sheet. And you'll notice it's going to change my extent. It's going to update a bunch of information. It's going to update my map title here, or my parcel number, so that's matching. It's updating my page size down here. Zoom in a little bit. Some of the other things it's updating, I've got a dynamic date here, so it figured out that that's today's date, so it's used that. It's updating the parcel number again down here. It's updating my scale as well, so if I pick a map that's a different scale, see if I can find one that's a different scale. That one's not. That one's not, so I'm not guessing very well today. Anyway, when I get to one that's a different scale, I'll point it out to you. It's going to update the scale and the scale bar, and everything will update dynamically. So what it's using in here is a couple of different things. One is something we call dynamic text. If I bring up this tool, what this is a type of text that will let me read from a number of different sources. So I can either pull the computer name, I can pull any of the data frame properties out of the map, I can pull the date, time, that kind of thing. I can add page numbers for it. And one of the things that I use most of the time is feature attributes. So if I go in here and insert a feature attribute, I can pull from any one of the layers in my map and take any of their attributes and put them on the layout. So I can, this is what I'm using for things like this title and the map number. So if I go in here and I'm going to use my layers data frame and go to that subdivision again, I've got a subdivision name field here, for example. And then I can select it using it's a spatial query that I use to select that. So I'm going to select a subdivision that intersects the center point of the current map. What that's going to do is that's going to intersect with the current map that I'm on. And I'll give that subdivision name. I'm going to just make it a bit bigger here so you can see it. And so this one's called Redlands South 72. And as I switch map sheets, it's going to query that and find that property and update it. So this one's Redlands South 60. So I've got these kind of dynamic properties going on. I've got dynamic scale bars, dynamic elements. The north arrow is also dynamic, so I can find one of these that'll rotate for me a bit differently. The north arrow will rotate to the rotation of the map. As I go through here, you'll find that a bunch of these will rotate to different angles. The scale, again, is updating. So here's one that's not 1500. I can show you that one. So that's all updating dynamically. And so you get all these properties in the data frame that are updating dynamically and in the page layout. Now, the other thing you can do is you can actually set up placement rules for how things get placed in the page layout. I can go, this is where this element tab comes in. I can go in here and I can actually take my scale bar, for example, and if I click on the properties for that, I've got this tab here that says element rules. And I've got an element rule manager. And what I can do is create a rule for how I want that scale bar to be placed. I'll just create a new rule here. What I've got are options for creating grouped rules, vertical rules, and horizontal rules. Now you can go in here and create a rule, and we'll call this my scale bar rule. Hit OK. And a group is really just a place to store other rules. Because typically with each element, you'd have a vertical rule for your, you know, north and south placement, and a horizontal rule for your east-west placement. So looking at a vertical rule here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to place the top. I'm going to just kind of create a sentence here as I do this. And what I'm going to do is align the top of my scale bar line. So look, here we go, below the bottom of, and I can put it as in relationship to the page, which will kind of lock it down. Or I can put it in relationship to any of the other elements on the page. I'm actually going to use my data frame here, just as an example. And then I can offset it. So I'm going to offset it, let's go 1 inch from the bottom of my data frame. So now I've got this vertical rule here. And I'm also going to create a horizontal one. So in this case, I'm going to align the center of my scale line, even with the center of my layers data frame. Okay. So now, when I do this, it's now tied my scale bar selected here with my data frame. So if my data frame moves, you'll notice the scale bar actually moves with it. It's all tied together. And I can set that up for any or all of the elements in my page layout and use it if I've got pages that are changing size, because I can set it up so, you know, all the elements will move in according to where they fall on the page. So if I want something always a half inch from the left margin, something always a half inch from the right margin, and something all centered, I can set it up to do that. And if my page changes size for any reason, it'll all just automatically shift. So I've got these dynamic properties now in the page layout placement as well. So all these dynamic properties combine to make it so you can create a really pretty complicated map series and, you know, build, in this case, 131 pages, just about the same amount of time it would take to build one map. So it'll let you batch all that up. Now the other thing we've got to do is sometimes is you've got to actually customize one map sheet, or you've got an inset on a map that you don't want to appear on all the other maps. You'll notice when I've been doing things to this map, so I should move that scale bar. Whatever I do to one map right now is happening to all the maps. So if I go over to this one, I'm going to get a different extent, but it's going to, the scale bar is moved in that map, just like it did all the rest. Well, let's say I want to make a change to this map, but I don't want it to affect all the other maps. One of the things I can do is I can go in here and make a map sheet single. And what that's going to do, it's going to kind of break my link here. You'll notice all these maps have this little chain link icon next to them. It's kind of to show that they're all linked together. They all share a common layout. When I make one single, I just broke that link. So now I've got, this map has its own layout, and I can go in and change it. I can go add, just pretend this is a data frame, but I could go add an inset over here, I could add some data to it, symbolize it. I could go into the symbology and symbolize it differently if I wanted. Let's say, for some reason, I wanted these green. No, let's make it like that. For some reason, I wanted to fill them. So I can go in and do any kind of change I want to this map sheet. Oh, and here's one where the north arrow rotates. Yeah. Yeah. Gotta figure out which ones do that before I do this next time. So now, if I go to one of the other map sheets, you'll notice this one maintains the same layout as all the rest of them. But the changes I made are only in this one, 31054 over here. And so it'll keep those changes. And you can go in and divide as many of them out as you want and make them single. So you can store multiple layouts. You can have as many different layouts as you wanted in one of these. Now the real, you know, advantage once you get all these made is then you can then batch print them. You can batch export them. So you can go in and you've got all the standard export formats you get from ArcGIS. So I can go in here and export GIFs, JPEGs, you know, PDF files, whatever I want. And then I have options for, you know, all the map sheets, just the current map sheet, or I can actually go in here and specify a range and say, you know, I want to export from map 1 through 5 and 7, and I can export them in different groups and combinations. So, that's really all the tool does. Questions? No PowerPoint. Yes.
Is there a way that you could place references on the page to the adjoining pages so that when you look at it, you can see, okay, this page is supposed to be over here?
Yes. So can you go in and put references to what the adjoining pages are? You can do that in two ways. And actually, there's another way coming in 9.2. What I'm showing you actually here is the 9.1 product. But you can either go in and set up what we call an adjoining sheet diagram, where you can show the group of pages around it. And you can actually tie multiple data frames in here and tie them together so they both update in synchronous. They synchronize with each other.
Okay.
So you can show it that way. And you can also go in and actually put dynamic text around the outside with the adjoining pages in it. Now, in 9.1, you need an attribute of what the adjoining pages are on each feature. At 9.2, there's an actual tool that looks north, south, east, west. And then it'll do the corners too. It'll do northwest, southwest, east, west. But yeah.
Another question. Is there a way to pull a detail out of your map and place it on the same page? Where you have maybe a minute parcel of land that really is not going to show up at that scale, so you want to be able to pull it out?
Sure. What you would need to do, though, is make that map sheet single. And then you can just add another data frame and load your layers in and just zoom to that area.
Okay.
So
it actually,
it's kind of a manual thing. It's not going to do it for you automatically.
It would actually have to be on a separate map sheet. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So you know how I made this one single right here?
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of stuck a yellow box in there. But the yellow box really was just an idea for inserting another data frame, you know, and adding an additional set of data to it. And then you can, you know, zoom into wherever and create a little inset for that data frame. So, oops, I got the wrong one. But the thing is, so I only want this new inset map on this page, and let's say I was going to go zoom into that area, I could just take those layers and copy them over and put them in this data frame and zoom to that area.
Okay.
So, and it's not going to affect all the other pages. Yes?
Can you do attribute queries where you would have only certain parts with certain numbers on the page and not show like the little piece of the parcels across the street?
Yes, yeah. So can you do attribute queries to, you know, let's say we only wanted to show the parcels in this division. If they're all attributed with, you know, a consistent attributing schema where, you know, one page has the attribute for that page and the next one has the attribute for that page, that dynamic definition query that I talked about will let you set up a definition query that filters those. So it will only show the ones on the page that you're on.
But could you still see the other side of the street? The line of time.
So, I'm sorry, I don't understand. So,
okay,
you want to see the street, but not the parcel?
Yeah.
Not the parcel.
Yes.
Column.
Yes, you could do that the same way, where you take the parcels and you code it on the parcels, but you leave the streets without that code. So the way I'm doing this right now is actually, have any of you guys used Clip to Shape before? Some of you? The way I'm doing this right now is there's actually an option in here. If I go, so all those properties I set up in the wizard, you can still get to after you've created this and you can change them. But what I've done is I've just taken this square block and I added a 25-meter buffer as I was going through. And so that 25-meter buffer is actually what's going over into the other set of parcels around the outside. But I've also got this clip to shape option going on. So what it's doing is it's adding that buffer of 25 meters, and then it's doing a clip to shape around that extent. And that's why my data frame actually goes out to here. But I'm only seeing the data within that clip to shape. Does that make sense? So I could, in this case, I could just shrink that buffer a little bit to get it to come to that street edge if I wanted to. So that's another option. Other questions? Yeah.
Can we do addition on the pages, like changes or additions in each change you set up?
Can you do additions or changes?
Additions, yeah.
Like to the data, changes. Do you mean?
Boundary changes or whatever.
Certainly. So this is pointing at the same database that you could use, and you can actually just start editing and do those kind of changes within here as well. So all this is really doing is moving the window that's looking into the data. And then it does, you know, any of those dynamic properties like rotation, buffer, all that kind of stuff as well. Yeah.
Can you mention all the new functionality that's coming in 9.2?
I'd have to show a PowerPoint to do it. Let's see.
I thought it would be good for everybody else to hear all that as well.
Really quickly, because I'm out of time.
Question.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's wondering about what new functionality is coming out at 9.2. So some of the main things that we're doing is we're adding something called a graphic table element, which allows you to build dynamic tables. You know, the same way I put dynamic text on and read from attributes and put a piece of text on, you can do an entire table, like an Excel spreadsheet that dynamically grows and shrinks depending on what data is in your extent. We also have something called an element library manager that lets you store things like logos and legends and graphics, or actually anything you can put on a page. It lets you store them in a database or a geodatabase that you can then share with everybody in your group. So if everybody's using the same standard logo, it gives us a way to store all those. The dynamic text is actually a complete rewrite at 9.2. We're adding a bunch of new functionality to it, just changing the interface, making it a little easier to use. We've changed the memory management, which is something you're not ever going to notice, but one of the requests we got, one of the requirements we have is the census wants to use this to batch up 10 to 20,000 maps. To do that requires lots of memory, so we've changed the way the memory handling is going, and it's not very exciting, but what it means is you can just go out and just send print and just let them go for days days as well. Let's see, some of the other big changes. This is why I need the PowerPoint, I can't remember them. So when I went through and created this map series, I had to select all the maps up front that I built them. At 9.2, you'll be able to add maps in kind of at your leisure. So you can, you know, build a series, actually you can build a map series with no maps in it, and then just go pick maps and put them in if you want. Or if you add an additional map, you can insert it into it. There's quite a bit that's going on, actually, with how it's handling the map sheets in this little dialogue at 9.2. Because of this whole requirement to do 10,000 maps, we had to have come up with new ways to group maps and do things like that. So, yes?
Are you renumbering books and pages, or are you using the same numbering system as before?
Are we renumbering the pages? Yes, we actually are. The order that this comes into this list right now is alphabetical, and you don't have any way to control that, or numeric if you're using a numeric number. So what it means is if you want your pages to have a certain numbering schema and be in that order, you would need to add an attribute to your feature class that you use to tile them up that has that number order in it, so that they come up in the right order that you want them.
In Contra Costa County, I'm not sure, in most counties, the numbering system of the parcel is also the book numbering system. So if you had to change that, you have to change all the parcel numbers in the county.
Well, it uses your numbering scheme, but the numbers on that.
Yeah.
We'll read that from the information on the table.
Okay.
So all I'm talking about is the order that they show up in this list. Which doesn't really, the only thing it affects is if you're trying to find one in that order, or if you're printing them in a certain order.
Okay.
The numbers that actually show up on the page and that sort of thing would match the numbers, and the books that you set up would match the map books.
Okay.
So it's not going to change any of that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right, actually, I think last question.
Besides scale, the
things you can set a field for?
Where you actually pull from the spatial reference and scale, what was there another one that you used?
So you can pull from scale. So you can pull from scale, you can pull one for rotation angle. You can also use one for projection, coordinate system. And at 9.2 you'll be able to pull from field for your buffer as well. All right.